fortunate we are the only opposition party here, but it's quite disturbing, I must indicate. Hence, I will suggest together, because the trend is not only in this team, but it's in all other teams. My other colleagues also indicated the same. It's quite disturbing, because these workshops are meant for our own growth and development, so that we can together be able to do our work much more effectively and with greater impact. Because as we understand issues, we are able then to make a difference, you know, meaningful contributions with more insight and understanding of issues. And as we interact and engage our, you know, the people we are paying oversight, or we are playing oversight on, we are able then to not waste their time on asking irrelevant questions or so forth. So it is important that we take a decision. Parties must make it clear to us as to whether they want to be part of the future workshops or they do not want to. So that we are able then in our planning to accommodate that. It's very difficult to do so if that is not made clear to us in advance, so that in our planning we know from the beginning that we should not involve. It's a pity that I have to express this in my opening remarks, but it is quite disturbing, and I have to do that so that everybody can understand that. Because this sets a precedent, and in future dealings, one will have to then take a decision, particular decision, when approached by such events. And sometimes it might not be nice when we take certain decisions from the management level. So I'm just saying that I'm introducing this so that we can be able to discuss it after the Auditor General's office has briefed us on their work. This is a very important BRRR process, an important process to us as the legislators, because that's when we would want to check whether what the department has been doing or has been claiming to have been doing is truly so. Because the financial and non-financial data that we'll be getting will be able to convince us whether what we've been hearing during the course of the year has actually happened. And that, coupled with our oversight visit to various sites, I think that would give us a clear picture. It's just a pity that this committee in this term, which started at the end of the financial year, unfortunately could not embark on any oversight trip. So we were not able to get a picture of exactly what the department in practice is talking about in terms of the work that they are doing. But we will be embarking on such trips in the near future so that you get the first-hand experience of what is happening. Yeah, let me then, without a waste of time, give hand over to the Auditor General office to then share with us the audit outcomes. This deals with the financial aspects of the report, of the annual report. You must remember these are audited statements, and there's been engagements prior to the final audit outcome. So members must bear that in mind and really be in a position to ask relevant questions, probing questions that will ensure that at the end of the day we help the country to steer to the right direction. Mr. Mona, can I give it to them? Thank you.
Sorry, Chairperson.
Yes.
There's an apology from Honorable Rando. She'll be joining us later. She's just gone to the hospital.
Yes. Mr. Gela, I deliberately did not deal with your input or comments and the apologies because maybe I needed to indicate that Mr. Mula indicated that he's going to be also briefing another committee on women and women, children, and people living with disabilities. So I just wanted to him to finalize, and then afterwards we'll engage on what I was talking to, and then we'll deal with the normal agenda items. I'm sorry about that. Thank you very much, Mr. Mula.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, it's only a pleasure to share the audit outcomes for the economic development portfolio with the committee. This is a very important portfolio. And in today, I would like to just provide members with information on the audit outcome for the portfolio, just to enable oversight to effectively execute oversight functions of this portfolio. The audit outcome, this is a very, very important slide or picture. Remember when we came here the last time and we did the presentation on audit outcomes, we said when we did the capacity building sessions, is we looked at how an audit report looks like. So you will see that there's a lot of annual reports here, and you probably already read the report of the department and the entities, and you will see in my report, it's broken up into a few sections. And the first section is the opinion on the financial statement. And in this portfolio, economic development portfolio, all of the entities received an unqualified audit opinion, meaning these financial statements are good. These financial statements, the figures in those financial statements are correct. Then I move on to a second section in my audit report, and it talks about my responsibility with regards to other requirements. And what I also do is I audit compliance with laws and regulations, important laws and regulations. My focus is supply chain management regulations and the treasury regulations, so basically the PFMA and treasury regulations. You will see there's a red here. That means in three of these entities, well, I think Competition Tribunal was the only one which is green. However, at ITAC, at EDD, and at Competition Commission, there were findings in the audit report relating to non-compliance with legislation. We'll touch on these matters later. Ideally, we want this to be green. So we want to move this picture here to green. Every circular or every pie here should be green in future. If you look at performance information, there were no audit report issues with regards to performance information or the audit of predetermined objectives. This is also our responsibility. Included in an annual report is a separate section which you are very familiar with, is where the department and the entities report on their performance against their predetermined objectives. We also audit that. So although there's no opinion on it, any findings which are significant enough to come into the audit report would have been included in the audit report. For instance, if there were inconsistency between what was planned in the annual performance plan and what was reported in the annual performance report, I would have reported that. Okay. However, here, if you look at it, your picture is looking good. It's green. Okay. Inside the pies, you'll see an arrow there. It's actually a yellow arrow. You actually have a stagnation in your audit outcome. There is area for improvement. These are not the best outcomes. You need all of these three blocks to become red. And I will detail during my presentation what are the root causes, why we have non-compliance, and what are the root causes and what are our recommendations in this regard. So I want to come back in a year's time, and I'm sure it's your desire also that all of these three become green in future. So that's basically the audit outcomes for this portfolio. These are the audit outcomes. These are the assurance levels. The assurance levels provided by management. The first, there's three levels of assurance. If you remember my presentation the last time, we spoke about combined assurance, and there's three assurance providers. The first line of defense is management, the accounting officers, and the minister, the executive authority. They are your first line of defense. Your second line is internal audit, the audit committee, and the third level is the portfolio committees. So these are how we assess the level of assurance provided by the assurance providers, and mainly they are in the yellow. This is due to findings which are coming or repeat findings year on year. So for instance, when we compare the audit outcomes year on year, there are some issues, but those issues are not being resolved. These are the key controls. I'm not going to focus too much on this slide. All I want you to look at is in the red column. You'll see that there are three entities in the red with regards to compliance with laws and regulations. Like I said earlier, if you link this back to the audit outcome, there's three entities which had non-compliance paragraphs in their audit report. So this is an area of intervention. How can I put it best? In that, I think it's best that the committee continuously monitor throughout the financial year, the next 12 months, that these were the issues. What actions have management put in place to address the findings that were reported in the 2013-2014 audit report? If we look in audit report of, the Competition Commission, there were issues regarding tax clearance certificates. Their procurement was made. They bought from certain suppliers or they utilized certain suppliers. However, they didn't obtain a tax clearance certificate. So I believe that currently the department should provide to the committee the progress the Competition Commission and the other entities have made in addressing the issues, addressing the findings that were raised in the previous financial year. If these issues that have been reported in our audit reports, if they are continuously monitored, if there's an action put in place, if the real root cause of the finding is addressed, that audit report is going to be clean. That audit report is not going to have any findings in it. So we're saying that just there needs to be focus on compliance with legislation. I think the department and the entity should report quarterly to this committee stating what progress they have made against the issues we raised in the audit report. These are the six key areas. Audit outcomes for the portfolio, these are the six risk areas. We focus, the AG focuses on a lot of issues when we audit on a lot of different areas. These areas we have identified as significant areas. Significant risk area. One is everyone's aware, supply chain management. Second one is the quality of submitted performance reports. Performance reports are merely performance against the predetermined objectives. Human resource management, very key. The quality of submitted financial statements, information technology, yes, and financial health. If I could speak about supply chain management, and you'll see that in 50% of the entities they are concerning. In 25%, that means one entity, it's good, and in one department we have one area we've rated it as a red. And I'd like to tell you about for each entity what were the issues that we identified in supply chain management. For economic development department, There was irregular expenditure which was incurred. Irregular expenditure merely meaning that due process wasn't followed in certain instances. These relate to tax clearance certificates also. So there were some instances, we're not saying in every instance, but there were some instances where the department did not get the tax clearance certificate. So it's not tax clearance. And this resulted in irregular expenditure. That was the irregular expenditure and the reason for that irregular expenditure at the department. At the Competition Commission, it's the same issue. Contracts and quotations were awarded to suppliers whose tax matters had not been cleared. That means, again, there was purchases or procurement that was made without obtaining the original tax clearance certificate. And there was also some irregular expenditure which was also incurred because of this. At the ITEC, There was irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure which was incurred, and this was disclosed, and this irregular expenditure is also because of tax clearance certificate. So the root causes of the supply chain management issues in this portfolio, they could have been prevented. They could have been easily prevented. It's due process that just needs to be followed. There needs to be that monitoring. So the monitoring controls need to be strengthened by management to ensure compliance with this legislation, to ensure that the three codes are in place, that the tax clearance certificates are in place, that they comply. So they are there. They are almost there. However, these controls need to be strengthened. So this is something that will have to be continuously monitored, both by management, the audit committees, the accounting officers and accounting authorities. The second area is the quality of submitted performance reports. 50% in the red, 50% concerning, and 50% is fine. The 50% in the red we want to talk about is the Economic Development Department. To put it in a very simple manner, what happens is the performance report is submitted to me on the 31st of May, and I'm given 2 months to audit this report. This is the report I'm talking about. It's the report against predetermined objectives. And when this report was given to me, it had errors in it. It was materially mistaken. There were a lot of errors, and those errors are identified by me, but it's not identified by the department's internal control. In the end, after I audited, management corrects the annual the performance report. So the report you're going to use is fine. Okay, it's correct. However, the issue is I shouldn't be picking up this. Management's internal control system should be identifying these errors. So there's definitely room for improvement. There's big room for improvement there. And this is normally what needs to happen, is there should be stronger review of the actual achievement of targets. And we should always ensure that whatever has been reported in the quarterly reports, in that annual performance report, that does tie back to the actual supporting documentation. That's then there is evidence to support what has been reported. We recommended that the review processes are implemented to ensure that the annual performance report is supported by reliable, accurate, and complete information. The second culprit here was ITAC, International Trade and Administration Commission, and same issue. It's exactly the same issue. Material misstatements were identified in the annual performance report by the auditor, subsequently corrected. Lack of review again is the issue, and lack of assistance. They go together. They go together. It wasn't checked properly, and there isn't support. And nobody checked whether what was reported in that performance report agrees to the actual files, agrees to the actual information. So we're recommending that the controls around there be strengthened specifically with regards to reviewing. Your third issue, it's a very important area, is human resource management. 25% concerning in the red is the Economic Development Department. Look, I don't want to hold back. But it's been an issue since day one. Human resource management has been an issue. I've audited this department from the 2010-11. It was their first financial year. And human resources management has always been an issue. There were instances where employees were appointed without following a proper process to verify the claims made in the applications are valid. Employees received overtime compensation in excess of 30% of their monthly salaries, in contravention of the public service regulations. Again, the issue here is a lack of monitoring controls in place to ensure adherence to relevant legislation. And we've recommended that management ensure that there are proper procedures in place and there's proper processes in place to ensure that they comply. When it comes to human resource management, it's a very busy area. There's a lot of compliance here. The public service regulations, it's very, very onerous. There's a lot that needs to be done. The department needs to be capacitated. We need to employ people at the right level, at the right skill, and all of that. So it's a very tricky area. But we're recommending that the committee focus on human resource management at the department. Focus on the action plans that management have put in place to address the human resource issues. The next issue is is the quality of the submitted financial statements. 50% are in the red, and 50% are the Economic Development Department and International Trade and Administration Commission. Same issue as your performance information. Financial statements are submitted to me on the 31st of May. However, the financial statements contained misstatements. They weren't accurate. If I had to express an opinion on those financial statements, it wouldn't have been a positive one. Okay. The errors in those financial statements in some areas, let's talk about the areas, accruals, receivables, some assets were identified by myself, were identified by the auditor. It wasn't identified by the entity's own internal controls. It was not identified. Okay? This is definitely a concern. Okay? Look, the controls...
Just a second, can you... Perhaps say more on that, expatiate on that. When you say accruals were only identified by yourself and not the department, not the management, just expatiate more. What do you mean by that? Because these are supposed to be debts that are going to be paid, isn't it? That are, you know, standing over for the next financial year. So that's why I want clarity, because that should be something that is known, so that we don't come back to this question later on.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, the financial statement, we can specifically talk about the issues or the areas, but what the issue is that in some instances, in some areas of preparing the financial statements, like the accruals area, the department did not have enough controls or sufficient controls. The auditor normally uses the term sufficient enough control to make sure that the accruals that they're going to record in their financial statements are complete. It's a standard risk. It's a very important area, because accruals is a liability which ultimately is a commitment to the department. They need to settle somebody. So it's a very important area. So the issue is here is the controls in this area weren't strong enough. The processes or the mechanisms that the department had were not strong enough to pick up the misstatement. That means we perform many procedures to identify, do we specifically focus on the completeness of accruals. An auditor normally does that. It's a very important area. So what we're saying is the department has not established sufficient daily and monthly controls to ensure complete and accurate financial statements. The solution, I'm going to give the solution we think, is that one is to strengthen those controls, is for the finance team, for the accounting officers to go and determine what are the controls that need to be established there. But one very important control that can be established is to prepare financial statements on a more regular or more frequent basis, but not just to prepare them, but to make sure that those financial statements are properly reviewed, are checked properly. And that, look, you can't go and establish finance has many areas to manage. They've got accruals, they've got supply chain management, they need to make sure the budget is getting spent in accordance, or expenditures in accordance with the budget. There's numerous areas to look at. So have a 10-point plan in place. Have some sort of mechanism or some sort of plan in place to ensure that, look, we're not going to get it right in a month's time, but we can get it right in about 4 months' time by each month implementing a new control. So our view was that it's critical that a full and proper set of financial statements, including all disclosure notes, are prepared on a monthly basis. These annual financial statements should be reviewed by the governance structure, that is by management, that's one, two, by internal audit, and three, by the audit committee. The financial statements, again, should be prepared, should be adequately supported by substantiating evidence to corroborate the validity, accuracy, and completeness thereof. Okay? And the final set of financial statements which are submitted to the auditors, they should be properly reviewed by the accounting officer. For ITAC, same. It's exactly the same kind of issue. The entity has not established the daily and monthly controls to ensure complete and accurate financial statements. This is a very important area. You will see it feature if you go through many annual reports in the public sector, many departments, many public entities or constitutional institutions. You'll notice that their financial statements were subject to material adjustments. Generally, this is a huge concern in the sector. Information technology controls is the only one that is 100% green, which is very good. Not a lot of focus. Normally, it doesn't impact on an audit outcome, but it's part of the control environment. So it's something that the committee can focus on, but if something pops up somewhere, IT governance, lack of control somewhere, department can just focus. Doesn't affect your audit outcome, but can affect very important, big impact it can have on the on information technology. Financial health, not really a concern in the sector. There were some one negative or two negative ratios at the department, but it wasn't anything of concern. That's why I put it in a yellow, but I don't believe that it's significant enough. Audit outcomes for the portfolio, most common root causes. When we as the auditors, when we perform the audit, we try during the process, but most auditors in the private sector just perform an audit. Our job is to actually to understand why this is happening. Why stop? We can audit, just audit and provide a report. But we go into the in-depth review and try and get an understanding of why this is happening. Why? Why did you pay late? Why did you not pay in 30 days? Why are your financial statements subject to adjustment? Instead of just telling them, the department or the entity, you're wrong, pass the journal, you did this, pass the journal, you did this wrong or whatever, you're going to get a non-compliance. No, we want to understand. We go back and try and get an understanding, a deep understanding, very important. It's a slow response. And the issues in this case were slow responses by management, the accounting officer, and senior management. This was a root cause at all. What we're saying here is that the issues that are coming through are similar issues from the previous year. Remember I showed you that picture? I said the audit outcomes are, it's a stagnation in audit outcomes. The audit outcomes are remaining the same year on year. The issues in supply chain management, similar issues to the previous year. Human resource, I've said it's always been a concern at the department. It's been a department, a problem there since the first day. So what we're saying is that there needs to be, I'm repeating myself, there needs to be that action plan which really identifies what the real root cause of the problem is. And somebody, management needs to go and execute that. Just go and make sure that they put actions in place to address what the issues are so they don't repeat themselves. Lack of consequences for poor performance and transgression. This is also a very, very important area in that irregular expenditure might be incurred. There might be non-compliance paragraphs, but there's no consequence. The finances, the performance reports might have been misstated year after year. The same errors are occurring year after year, but there is no action taken against people who have transgressed or because of poor performance. And there might be an area, key officials lacking the appropriate competencies. This was specifically at the ITAC with regards to the preparation of financial statements. So this is, if you want to ask why, or if your question is why the issue in the audit reports, if you go through those audit reports and you want to know why the supply chain management issues, why the HR issues, this is why. There hasn't been sufficient action taken against slow responses by management. There's no consequences for poor performance and transgression. Status of key commitments made by the Minister of Economic Development. When we did get a chance to engage the Minister, the commitments that he's made was to engage with the audit committees to stand there. The ones that are still in progress is the minister will be tracking progress of the action plan to address prior year issues and the quarterly key control assessment. The minister will also monitor and track progress on human resource management, which is one of the key areas, supply chain management and compliance with laws and regulations. Also to improve the effectiveness of internal audit and the engagement with all entities to address internal control deficiencies. Human supply chain management issues, quality of financial statements, those are all issues that can be identified by the internal audit function before we come in. The internal audit function can be used to sweep clean before the external auditors come in. So it's a very important mechanism or a very important tool which can be used to strengthen governance in the, at the department and at the public entities. This is the oversight model. My next slide, the oversight model. And well, there's four key considerations for the oversight model step. Third one, there's strategic planning, first step in the process. And strategic planning, the committee normally will look at is the strategic plan aligned with the legislative requirements. So this is a key step that takes place during this process. And they will inquire whether the strategic plan and the strategic initiatives are aligned with government priorities, the National Plan on Action, the NPEF, and challenges. What are the challenges in meeting the strategic objectives? What are the initiatives to address them? And to evaluate how success will be measured. Okay, that's what the committees normally look for in the strategic planning process. In the budgeting process, the important part is to look at, to understand the mandate of the entity to determine if there's adequate budget and human resources to deliver on the mandate. So there's a plan, there's an annual performance plan, there's a strategic plan. Strategic plan is normally over a period of 3 or 5 years. And an annual performance plan is that 1 year plan for a financial year. And the important thing to look at is there enough resources, is there enough in terms of humans, in terms of people, and in terms of budget to address or to cover or to ensure that we can meet the objectives and the targets in the plan. Sometimes it's too much. National Development Plan and SONA initiative, there must be a clear link between the budget and the annual performance plan. So when we're looking at the annual performance plan, there should be that link. Also to look at during this process, is there adequate funding to execute the strategy? We think as the AG it's very important to analyze prior year expenditure, to analyze expenditure, to look at the trend analysis. Where have there been increases? There are increases in compensation for employees, but your staff establishment is not increasing. To ask those kind of questions, to analyze prior performance against actual expenditure. I mean, you're getting the same amount of budget this year, but last year you underspent 5 million, the year before you underspent. Why do you want the same amount of money? The assessment of breakdown of budget and how much is going to administration, and to look at things like how much is going to travel and subsistence, for instance. Why is there so much money going to travel and subsistence? Why is there so much going for rental or whatever? Anything that stands out for you or concerns. To ask this question, the CFO normally can answer that. Ensure value for money. The impact of financial management matters such as accrual, litigation, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. How much is lost in these cases? Then, if we come there, you get implementation and in-year monitoring. In this area, keeping management accountable and determining whether there is compliance with reporting responsibilities set out in the PFMA, compliance with the Appropriations Act, effective utilization of resources, and to review the annual report of the department, including the audit report, and to consider both the financial and non-financial information. The annual report has very important information on it, both financial and non-financial. The financial statements and the read together with the annual performance report will give you an excellent overview of the department, excellent understanding of where the money is going. The financial statements are broken up so nicely per economic classifications, meaning it's broken up into goods and services. How much is spent on people, how much is spent on goods and services, how much in terms of travel expenditure, how much in terms of purchasing of assets. You can see all of that there. It also breaks it down for you in terms of programs. This department has 4 programs, administration and 3 other programs. You can see in there also how much money is going to each program. Implementation of and monitoring, which is end-year reporting, which is the end-year reporting part, is the department spending on the right track. This is what you do throughout the year. Is spending on the right track. You pick up overspending easily by the second quarter, third quarter. If they've exceeded already the half-year budget, you'll be able to pick up any overspending. Does management evaluate monthly and quarterly reports? Do action plans exist to address audit findings? So this is what I'm keep on harping on, but this is what is important for me to make sure that slide is green. Is that does action plans for the committee to check if their action plans are in place to address the audit findings, and that will improve financial management and accountability, and are these plans being continuously monitored? Are they designed, implemented controls over financial and non-financial information. Are procedures in place to address fraud or to identify fraud? And are there adequate governance arrangements in place, and are they effective? It's always important for a committee to look at. One very important oversight committee is the audit committee. So it's very important to know that there must be that audit committee. Things won't go too well if there's no audit committee and if there's no internal audit. So those are key governance structures that need to be established and need to be in place. I've included this slide here. It's got role of the portfolio committee, rule 201. You know this much better than me. So I've just included this slide here. And considerations for the portfolio committees when dealing with performance managing. All of the things that I discussed now. Okay, I can just go through some of them again. It's like, are the targets that they include, you know, the strategic plan, the annual performance plan come to this committee for review. And the things to focus there is also, is the target realistic? Are the departments putting in their targets which are not realistic? Remember we spoke about SMART. Mm. The targets must be specific, measurable, achievable. You know, they must be achievable targets, relevant targets. How the entities will be ensuring, so if they got targets in there, how will they ensure that they achieve these kind of targets? And the portfolio committee should review annual achievements of predetermined objectives by entities. These are included in the annual report. The committee must approve and track changes to strategic plans and annual performance reports. I like to department sometimes make changes, or entities like to make changes at times to the report. The next slide talks about the combined assurance model, and basically for you just to see where you fit in there. We touched on that in the beginning of the presentation, but that's, the portfolio committee is normally sits in the third level of assurance, not the first line of defense. Management is the first line. Internal audit committees are your second line of defense, and the portfolio committee is your third line of defense. How does clean administration improve service delivery? And creating a better and dignified life for citizens of South Africa through timely, efficient, and effective economic service delivery. Robust financial and performance management systems. Independent, relevant reporting by the AG. Commitment and ethical behavior. All of these will result in improved service delivery. I just added those two additional slides here. Basically, there's two slides here. The PFMA and the Treasury Regulation set out Section 38 of the Treasury Regulation, set out the responsibilities of the accounting office. Section 55 of the PFMA sets out the responsibility of the accounting authority. At ITEC, you've got and at CC and CT, you have accounting authority. At the department, you have an accounting officer. We believe at the AG that those are very important sections. They set out that the accounting officer is responsible to ensure that your financial statements are complete, accurate. The accounting authority and the accounting officers to ensure that the entity has sufficient controls, internal controls. They have controls for good financial statements, for procurement. And the steps also that need to be taken in terms of irregular expenditure, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, unauthorized expenditure, are set out clearly. The consequence management is set out clearly in the Public Finance Management Act. So the guidance, the guidance is there, the law is there. Chairperson, that is the presentation. Thank you, Chairperson. I can take questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Miller, I think, for the presentation. On the audit outcome of the department, we really appreciate this information. And we will then open the floor for questions, members. Mr. Murray, I saw your hand. Mr. Atkinson, Mr. Ndadekiani, any other? Okay, in that order, please.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you to the Auditor General. I mean, this is, I think, robust audit and reporting like this is really boosting confidence in an institution like the AG. So, I mean, we cannot help but really express our gratitude. And, I mean, where we are not on the day-to-day basis involved, we need a mechanism like yourself to really point these things out to us. So thank you very much for that. If I can start from relatively in the beginning, one of my biggest concerns is the problems with supply chain management. And we know from experience, from reports, from so many examples where that is the sometimes the root cause for corruption and increasing a project bill or, you know, back ends. And I mean, we know that it's not only in government, but it's in so many other organizations where government or, you know, quasi-government procurement processes are involved. Have you looked at the service, specific service providers? Because it seems like, you know, due processes and tax clearing certificates was one of the major problems. And often one gets that, you know, a reason why tax clearing certificates are not procured because they will probably not pass the test if you have received that. So have you done any evaluation on the specific service providers? You know, and in other words, are they compliant, or is it just a bad oversight and a control mechanism? You know, I just want to establish whether money has been lost, whether it is dubious contractors or service providers, whether something is done on that. Then on the status of key commitments by the minister, you know, I don't know if you can share with us the response and the reaction of the minister when these repeated transgressions were conveyed to him or disclosed to him. And I mean, which of these was committed in the past but was not really improved in terms of this audit? Then my last question. I think that, if you look at that last page, the accountability and remedies to address the transgressions and poor performance, that page of yours, and you say about the booklet and how it should be done, who must take responsibility to assure that that takes place? Because it seems like there are acts and laws, but, I mean, is the Auditor General reporting this to someone? Is it us? Is it the minister? Because one must really go and look at not only, you know, making a lot of noise, but if you have got authority to do that and to take it further to make sure that things get happened. I know that there's a role for the portfolio committee, but, you know, there's a difference between oversight and have the authority to correct this and to do something about that. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Mather. Ms. Atkinson?
Thank you, Chair. Just a question for the Auditor General's office. The Minister of Local Government made a comment the other day that the root cause of a lot of the problems in municipalities and the audits of municipalities is lack of properly qualified people. And you've identified the fact here, and in fact in a big red block, which means regressed, that at ITAC, you have key officials lacking appropriate competencies, rather. Now, in your earlier discussion about the various different things that were lacking in the departments, there were two that came up all the time. One was the Economic Development Department, and the other was ITAC. And certainly without appropriately qualified people, one cannot even hope really to have a proper kind of audit outcome or audit consequences if you don't have appropriately qualified people. So I'd like to know what intervention you're doing in that regard. And also just a second question is, did you find the people at the Economic Development Department to be appropriately qualified for the position as well? Because there did seem to be a very high level of non-compliance on that side. And I'm just wondering if it was really just for the first two causes, or if there was an element of people not being properly qualified in the Economic Development Department. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Chen.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And we thank Mr. Mueller for a simplified presentation that is suitable for non-financial persons like myself. I'm then able to can follow the concerns and particular directives that he's making to the department. But let me also indicate here, Chairperson, that while obviously we must be concerned about the fact that, you know, since 2010-2011, he has been indicating the same mistakes which are not being corrected. While that is the situation, I think what we also need to accept at the same time is that Mr. Mueller is not rubbishing the whole work of the department. He's not saying this is absolute nonsense, close shop, and so on. He says in his presentation that there is light at the end of the tunnel, but there are elementary mistakes that are not being corrected, which we need to be worried about. Like, for instance, documentation being released quickly without a scrutiny. I think the department needs to work on that. Before you issue a document internally, there must be some kind of a system. If I prepare the document, it must go to Honorable Mazimbi. She looks at that, it goes to Honorable Chief Whip there, and so on. Honorable Tenten there, he says, I'm happy now. Now you can you can send this document out. I think a non-financial person like myself would think of putting such measures into place. This is what he is telling us. So I think as we ask the questions and as we ourselves try to find systems, because at the end of the day, we also have a responsibility, oversight responsibility, to ensure that things are happening there. So I think we also need to be objective, not subjective. We need to be very frank with each other, and we must be constructive, because the line is very thin between constructive and destructive. So we must not throw in the towel. The question that I want to ask Mr. Mueller is...
Through the chair.
Oh, through the chair. Yes, through the chair. My apologies, Chair. The question that I would like to ask, Chair, is because he has been asking these questions over and over again, without asking as to which level of the leadership responded how, without asking that question, because sometimes that question is not necessary. The question we ask is, what is the gist of the response that you have been getting along? That gives you some pointers as to what the real challenges could be, which would then assist us as a portfolio committee members to play our role in trying to provide the solutions. Because in life, it's very good to ask the questions. Everybody can ask a question in this world. But sometimes we need to ask the questions within the context of providing the answers as well. in this world we must try to be closer to the answers than just, you know, throwing questions and not even sometimes listening to the answers when people respond, you see. That is destructive. Please indicate to us, Mr. Muller, what you think you were able to deduce from the responses that we have been getting from time to time about what the problems are, so that we can then, as members of the Portfolio Committee, look into that and try and work out something that would help the department to move a little bit forward. I thank you.
Thanks, sir, and that's an afterthought. Okay. You can come in now.
Thanks. Mind chair, I think it's important to come closer to the really auditors. I think that we have some kind of auditors and the internal audit. You know, if you keep on coming, having the same repetitive, you know, things that you will normally find. Now, I know they might be competent enough, but they might be want to be popular. Maybe by not even suggesting some kind of recourse on those that are failing to do their particular work. I think it might be one, I wish to suggest that it might be one of the problems. The second one, it's an issue when you operate in terms of plans. Now, it means if you want to correct something, you must have a plan in place to do that. And to make it very clear that there's that 10-point plan normally you're supposed to have. When you check the records, I wonder they are following up about those plans, they have any kind of plan, as the audit and internal auditor. The last one. I think the issue of, you see, they are non-negotiables in terms of finances. The issue of three codes, everyone knows about it, even anyone. Even wherever where you go, that's one. If they fail to do the issue of recourse, I don't think the issue of real recourse must really take its course. I think it's high time. When you talk about that one, trickle, issues of tax clearance, those things you people understand that you can't deal with a company without the tax clearance at all. So I think these are the issues that need to be dealt with. Mind share is not really, but it's to really poke some kind of assistance where we can assist in going forward. I think I want to deal with that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. No other assistance? Okay. I think we are moving from the premise that you are our ally. And therefore, it is very important that we understand issues from your perspective, since you have a particular mandate to perform in as far as financial matters, auditing financial matters of the state are concerned. And therefore, to me, issues of consistency are very important, especially when making a finding like this one that you are making of a department. There are various areas where I feel I'm not particularly settled well, you know, when it comes to understanding the logic, or maybe the way you do things, or the way you conclude on certain issues. I'll tell you for an example. When you look at the drivers of internal control, you sort of, under effective leadership culture, you would say it's 100% well. But as you continue, you know, painting the picture, you then paint a picture as though this management is not really well. I don't know. It's sort of giving me, you know, a bit of a confusion as to what would be then an effective leadership culture. Because to me, effective leadership culture would include the same issues that you've spoken to, that would relate to setting up of controls, ensuring that one left hand speaks to the right hand when it comes to those types of things. There's nothing moving without the other, you know, other one knowing what is happening before anything goes. That's the culture that I understand when you talk of the tools of control you're talking about. But then if you give us the picture as though everything is 100% correct, and whereas there are these subtle issues that you are raising, subtle but very, very heavy issues, depending on how we hear things from different areas. But where I'm seated, I find them quite heavy. I mean, for the fact that documents can go out of the department without being verified, it's a serious matter. It's a very serious matter to me. It's not just a light matter that I can then take it that, because to me it says this department has a serious challenge. And therefore we need to understand why. It's quite, this is one of the areas that I feel is not. And then you look at the IT system, you said in all, including the entities, 100% in terms of controls and everything. Then I ask myself, in terms of the security system perspective, why would there be a document that would go out like that without a final hand, for instance, touching that document and verifying whether that document is correct? But then when you look at IT also, it's about information. And when I look at the department's information, to me, it's not the information that would satisfy me in terms of what needs to be in that department for information purposes. You might say information in terms of the daily, day-to-day management of issues, but I look at information as what the department is able also to give out, you know, on a daily basis, so as to what exactly are they doing, where will they be. In terms of this APP, this is where we're intending to go in this during the course of this quarter, and this is what we'll be doing. So if I want to visit there as a citizen of South Africa, I'm able then to touch a button and say, I need to follow up on what this department is doing, and therefore I'll be able to find that information. To me, this information sharing. But if, as auditors, you come in and tell us, no, everything is 100%, and me, where I'm standing, say, find it difficult to get that kind of information as a citizen, what does that mean? Maybe I'm understanding things in the other way around, so that we are able to move as allies from the same wavelength. Because as an ally, I cannot, as this team, for instance, we must have the same objective of what exactly do we want to achieve by sitting here with you, so that from here, when we approach or we engage with the department, we are able to engage with it from a common perspective. So it is important that all of us, including yourself, you are able to move from the same wavelength. You're raising very pertinent issues in terms of risk management issues. And then there are some instances, and to me, if it's not about internal controls, then what is it? If you say in another area, no, things are in the red. And in another area, when you check overall and then you say, no, things are like this, it sort of gives me a challenge because they don't add up. Things do not add up to me in as far as I'm concerned in terms of the total analysis. Because the total picture, you know, if you had ended where you started, I would have said, it's okay, let's go, everything is fine. There's no need for you to even elaborate further on each aspect of this audit outcome. But as you continued, you gave us another figure. I was quite a bit confused myself. So that puts a real question mark as to whether is it a fair way of doing things, or are there other? Is it what you have that you can use for now, but without really getting deeper to give us the challenge? Because you are also here challenging us somewhere here about the root causes, ensuring that the department attends to root causes of some of these issues. And my colleagues have asked you questions, certain questions related to that, which I think it was a bit fair, so that you begin to then clarify as to whether you yourself, have you checked those issues? Have you verified with them? Were you satisfied with the responses that you got? And what those responses did to impact on this particular report? To me, that would be a very fair analysis at the end of the day, if you could respond to that. Maybe I'm seeing things differently. It's not how you work. But I'm asking questions that would make sense to me, and that would enable me to even be able to engage further with the stakeholders that you've just mentioned here. Mr. Muller, may I hand over to you? By the way, you introduced the MM to me, but not to the team. It's important that they know who you are with. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Chairperson on my right and honorable members on my right is Felina Jube. She's the audit manager on the audit. She does most of the audit work and all of the audit detail. She's responsible for the team that does the audit of the department. Honorable Chair, through you, in response to the question, with regards to the supply chain management issues, the specific service providers, when it came to the finding regarding tax clearance certificate, there's no trend that it's a certain supplier. My take is there was a deficiency in the control with regards to tax clearance certificate. So it might have been that the department in the year before might have not always been collecting the tax clearance certificate, and there might have just been a gap that just fell through. So it's not to say pervasive in that all of the transactions don't have tax clearance certificates, or it's only what a certain supplier. It was just something that fell through the cracks. That was the issue with regards to the tax clearance certificate. With regards to the statement or the status of the key commitments, and in which areas there was no improvement. With regards to, looked at last we've engaged with the minister, it's been some time back. It's probably I can't remember now. If it's in July 2013 or so, and when we discussed the matter with the minister, we would have shown the areas where there's concern. Like I always spoke about human resource management, and the only issue which I was really concerned about year after year is human resource management. And you'll see in the commitments, that the minister did commit to focusing and paying more attention to human resource management. Behind human resource management, the department will be able to tell you what their concerns are, or what is the issue that resulted in the repeat findings, or findings again in the area of human resource management. I think the department will be better placed to respond to that. ultimately, who's responsible for taking action against transgressors, against transgressions? If you go back to the PFMA, I might be repeating myself, but the PFMA in section 38, when it talks about irregular, talks about the general responsibilities of accounting officers, and it talks about when the PFMA talks about irregular expenditure, it sets out. If the PFMA sets out what should happen, if there's irregular expenditure, if it has been incurred, the first thing to do is you report it to National Treasury. The next, so the second thing is you initiate some sort of investigation or try and get some understanding of who's responsible for this irregular expenditure. And then basically, based on that, you take some sort of a disciplinary action or steps against that official who committed the entity to fruitless and wasteful expenditure or irregular expenditure. So it's the Treasury regulation which sets out the accounting officer's responsibility in terms of taking action against transgressors. With regards to the lack of properly qualified people, what intervention the AG has put in place with regards to this? Look, we maintain our independence. So what we'll do is to actually stop at the point and say that, listen, this is the real root cause. We'll go up to the county authority, go up to the minister, go up to those charged with governance and tell them what the root cause is. And if the root cause is that someone is not appropriately qualified or something, we will communicate that to those. But that's as far as we go. I don't know if you're aware, but at the AG, we try on a quarterly basis to meet with the minister. We will try on a quarterly basis to meet with the accounting officer. Accounting officer, we meet much more frequently, but definitely on a quarterly basis, we must try and meet the minister. If we don't meet to him, we will write to him. We will try and meet with the chairperson of the portfolio committee as often as we can, maybe twice a year or once a year, to communicate what the issues are. So from our side, the interventions will be is to do a proper assessment on a quarterly basis, at the department. We call it a key control assessment. So we spoke about, there was a question directed at me regarding what do we do with regards to the items that are reported in the audit report. What do we do to resolve those issues? We go in quarterly, every 3 months, a team will go in and go and assess what is the status of that finding. They can't do a full-blown audit, but they will limit it to reviewing some documentation, asking some questions. They will summarize that information. They will write then a letter to the DG. They will discuss it. We will discuss it with the DG. We will try and meet the minister. So we will communicate wherever. We try and eliminate the surprise element in an audit. So we don't want to come and just tell you assets qualified, billions of millions of rands of everything. No, we're going to tell you throughout the quarter, whatever comes out. Obviously, there's limitations in the process. But we will and can, on a quarterly basis, go to management, go to the minister, go to the committees and discuss this. We even discussed this at the audit committees. With regards to qualifications at the department, we've never identified as a root cause of that skills is an issue at the department in terms of in financial statements, annual performance reports. And those issues, we've never seen it as that. We've documented in our discussions and in our management reports and in our discussions with the DGs that the issue is probably, it is, like I said earlier, is to strengthen the controls in these areas. We actually, there's no specific audit procedures that look at qualifications or anything like that. But if there is something that comes to our attention, we will report it. Anything that's negative that comes to our attention, which we have concern about, we will report. The auditor does look at qualifications. We do look at qualifications to assess the control environment. So just to assess it, okay, this is the qualifications. Okay, so your financial statements, there's a good chance that it's not a risk. It's not a risk. There was a question with regards to what is the gist of the responses, and basically, like, what are the barriers that's coming in the way of a clean audit here, or of getting an unqualified audit, considering what management says, what management has indicated are the issues. I've seen it. I've seen my discussions with the department. Is I feel that there's a commitment to no findings in all areas. I definitely feel that there's a commitment from management. To respond to your question, the issue is that there's sometimes things that are falling through the cracks. Okay, and I just want to go back and say that the action plan will address this issue. The action plan will address the things that are falling through the cracks. So if those things are being focused on, I don't think you have a problem with leadership. I honestly don't think so. I don't think there's failures in leadership. I think there's failures that there are. Sometimes there's cracks in the control environment. I think that's where the issue is. I honestly feel that's where... Look, we spend a lot of time trying to understand what the real root causes are. What is the problem? What is the gist of the problem, considering what management is? And I really think that there's just a control environment which can be strengthened. The issues that can be dealt with, just on the comments that you were making, I believe, like I said earlier, what the honourable members had to say is that, Chairperson, and my focus of the presentation was, it doesn't come out so clearly, but when I show you the pictures, I show you green is good, and I show you green again, and green is good, but my focus was on the negative areas. So I'm not saying that... that this department is a disaster. I'm not saying that it's a mess, but what I'm saying is that there are areas which can be improved on. And what I tried to do during the presentation is to unpack those areas. Like I went into supply chain management, I went into quality of financial statements, I went into the quality of annual performance report. My apologies if it came out wrong, but what I tried to do is unfortunately what I report on and what I have to say, it is negative things. It's the nature of the work. I can't report, there's nothing to report on the positives, you don't need to know. But on the negatives, I need to tell you about. So that was my focus. I needed to go in and then I needed to explain to you that this is the issue, say tax clearance certificate. And then I tried to unpack that and say, no, the root cause for it was there was a lack of control. And then what I said after that is I recommend that an action plan be put in place. To address the issues. With regards to information technology, I understood that the information that comes to audit or the information that is taken out by the department, like the financial statement and the annual performance report, come through an information environment, come through an IT environment. And if IT is fine, how come there are errors in the annual performance plan and how come there are errors in the financial statements? The reason for this is the financial statements and the annual performance plan are supported. Although there are some IT environments which support that or are the base of that, a lot of the information is based on manual systems. Right. The performance information is based on mostly manual system. The financial statement is based on BAS, which is a report is drawn from BAS. However, there's information in the financial statement that is not drawn from BAS. It's drawn from it's from manual system. You see the disclosure notes, and you talk about contingent liabilities, and you talk about tangible assets. Those are all things from manual system, manual processes. That's why my recommendation in one area is to create and strengthen the daily and monthly controls over financial statements. Chairperson, with regards to effective leadership culture, it's something that we've made it green. This is because the areas where we use checklists and effective leadership culture, what we looked for was whether there was a code of ethics, whether all the positions are filled, whether there is a lot of corruption, whether there is a lot of areas of concern in the department, the extent and nature of the findings by internal audit and external audit, the extent and the nature of non-compliance. So we looked at all of those issues to determine how serious it is to take it to a green. But our view is that the issues are more of control, financial and performance issues. Chairperson. I hope I was able to answer that question.
Well, if the way I understand you is that you're putting it at, on average, you look at the average overall issues, and then you say this is what is it, and without, and then you don't consider the cracks that are there, you know, the level or extent of those cracks. That's what I understand from what you're saying, which is according to what you are expected to do, and because you can't go beyond that. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, but in all instances, in every finding, in everything that is reported as a negative, financial statements, annual performance reports, supply chain management, I have looked for a root cause. I've looked for a root cause. The root cause for it lies in the area of financial and performance management and not leadership. I don't believe there are. Maybe human resource management, I've plugged it to leadership because I said it's been continuing for a long time. I've blamed that one on leadership. If you look at my graph or my picture on page 8 of my detailed briefing document, you will see that I've made it red for human resource management. But the rest of the issues, I've said it's a problem with the control environment. If management don't, if it continues, then it definitely now becomes a leadership issue, because we've told the management know what the issue is, but it's not really getting resolved. It's not getting the attention it needs, and it can move. And Chairperson, I think definitely identifying root causes, identifying in which area it falls is not a very simple task, very difficult task, and it takes a lot of research and work from our side also, Chairperson.
Maybe I still have a lot to learn on management effectiveness, or leadership effectiveness issues. Because if you say to me HR management is not a management matter, it's not reflective of what kind of management is there, it's something else. If you say compliance matters are not a reflection of what the management is doing on a daily basis, something, and also issues of reporting, I will take it, because that's how you're dealing with those issues. But I think here we really would want to correct and help in correcting what, or assisting in with recommendation on what can be done if we find any discrepancy. That's what we want to do. And I think we are the first people to be happy when a department gets unqualified audit opinion. We're very happy if a department performs well. We are the first one actually to relate if everything goes well. But at the same time, we don't want to deceive ourselves. We want to be sure that what we're happy about is actually what is real. We're not going to be, you know, happy and celebrating. At the end of the day, we find that what we're celebrating is just premature. I hope that these are just little cracks that we need not to worry about, as you're saying, but in overall, everything is fine. Because that's the picture you're giving us. Okay. Thank you very much. Unless there are any follow-ups, one or two, that's fine. It's time for the next engagement. But Simone, thank you very much for this presentation. It surely helps us to understand what has been going on for the past financial year. And we really appreciate, because it actually prepared us to engage with the department in the coming session now. Thank you very much. And we will keep in touch as usual and try to find some more information on the issue. Otherwise, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair, for the opportunity.
Okay.
Chair, is it fine if we excuse ourselves?
That's okay.
Thank
you. Members, can we have a 2-minute stretch and comfort break, and then we'll come back?
Thank you.
Yesterday we got a message that tomorrow morning, I mean Thursday morning, will be set aside for party caucuses until lunchtime. And when you look at our program, it was indicating that we are meeting the whole day on Thursday. We have since, with Zandi standing in for Nomthando, who's not well. So we spoke with Zandi that we're going to shift our meeting from 9:30 to start at 1, or after 1, at 1, yes. Are we providing lunch if we start at 1? What kind of lunch?
It should be a sit-down lunch.
Yes. Okay, Stanislaw, so we'll take care of that. But the main issue here is that the meeting will start at 1, and we'll have that lunch before we commence fully with the meeting, and then we'll continue with what with the financial aspect of the performance of the department, and then we'll then go to the competition commission, which might see us finishing quite late, later than even 6-7. So it means therefore that transport must be arranged for members. So, colleagues, I think also we need to, I need to inform members that tomorrow, I don't think it is, today actually, if we don't finish beyond 3, I have to leave. Because I'm supposed to be going to Durban today. I think as you have heard in the news, there's a national launch by the president of the ocean economy, fast tracking of that that invite. Yeah, but that's the launching of the ocean economy. But what is this called? Pakisa, yes, Operation Pakisa. So it will be in Durban tomorrow. So I'll be leaving today because we have the flight problem. Hence I have to be leaving early. So I'll request then Mr. Gwede to continue with the chairing. I will start the meeting, but then in the process I'll have to leave. That's my apology. Today's apologies, let's give to Zandi.
It was Mr. Lekota.
We only received a written apology from Mr. Lekota. What are the reasons for not attending? Talk.
He's attending another portfolio committee meeting.
Okay. Thank you. Can we get another? We don't entertain anything that's not written. That's the principle here. If members want to absent themselves, please forward your written apology to the secretary, and then the secretary will read it out. Otherwise, we don't entertain. And so, for now, I think we have Mr. Gottes' apology, and we'll record it as such. Colleagues, earlier on I had started in my remarks, opening remarks,
I'm sending an apology on behalf of Mr. M. Legota that he will not be attending PC meeting due to other PC commitments clashing. Please note that due to these clashes, Mr. Legota will no longer be serving as a member of this committee.
Oh.
And it was communicated to the convener of the other parties.
But I think he needs to be advised what to do, because if he's no longer a member, then it must be sent to the to the ATC so that it's recorded likewise there. Okay. Earlier on, for the purposes of Mr. Mare, I think, when I opened the meeting on my remarks, I did indicate to allude to the fact that it has come to my attention that the information sharing workshop went well, and that members of the opposition parties, except NFP, yes, did not attend, even though they had committed to, indicated that they will be attending. I expressed my dissatisfaction to that regard and indicated that it is important that members, especially from the opposition parties, if they have taken a stance not to attend workshops or any information or any gathering that is meant to grow and develop members, they must indicate so. So that if that's a principled decision that they are taking as a party, so that we know exactly, you know, what to do when we have to deal with the issues related to workshops and so forth. It's very much important that the parties become open to us and tell us in advance, unlike what parties have done, wherein confirmations were done, preparations were done on our part, resources were committed, and then members could not turn up, or just send late-minute excuses. It is so because I'm worried, because we are the people who are supposed to be guarding against wasteful expenditure. There's nothing wrong in members wanting to develop themselves. Hence, we seek for permission, and we granted the permission to do so. If the leadership of the institution feels what we're doing is of no relevance, I don't think they will give us any permission to undertake such activities. For the mere fact that they give us permission to hold workshops, because they understand that in terms of human resource development strategy of the institution, we have to from time to time, appraise ourselves and also, you know, make sure that we are up to at par with others in terms of information. I think it's very, that's why they then agreed for us to hold such workshops. So, colleagues, I also indicated that such actions really make us to take them as precedents, so that in future decisions, if we are to take decisions in future, we will then take that into cognizance. And I don't think there's anyone who's going to blame us if we take such decisions. So I think from the management perspective of this PC, it will be important that we are guided so that we don't take things for granted and yet they are serious. If members are not interested in their own personal development and growth, they must indicate so that we don't waste time planning and attaching resources to events or activities that are not worth, you know, doing for them. I know there are members who found or who will continue to find such events very important, but those who do not think that would be important, please indicate to us so that we know exactly where you're standing. I think we are all adults. We can't, therefore, in the process of everything, be piggybacking. We need to know, take decisions, tell us we are not interested in this. Don't tell us in one instance, no, I'm ready, I'm going. On the same things that are really impacting the same way when we look at them. You can't. It's not for you to pick it back. If you want to take part in this committee's activities, let's do so. Because all of us are learning, all of us are trying our best to do our job. And in so doing, we'll from time to time come up with the means that would sharpen our understanding of issues, or ways of sharpening our understanding of issues so that we can better our actions towards engagement on similar issues with other stakeholders. That's, I'll end there and request us to discuss this. I'll give us at least 10 to 15 minutes for this discussion, Mr. Atkinson. And then Mr. Mare, Mr. Tetriani.
Chair, as a party, we support all means to increase our knowledge, and certainly we support workshops. The DA's issue is because we're in a period of austerity, that we don't support workshops that are an additional cost to Parliament. In other words, we feel that those workshops can be held in the parliamentary precinct at really at no cost to Parliament, or at very, very little cost to Parliament. And the DA has taken a principal decision that, you know, obviously oversight visits, we need to travel for those because we have to go to different parts of the country. We accept that, or if we do trips overseas, we need to do that. But when it comes to workshops, there's a feeling in the DA that they can be held in the parliamentary precinct, and that we feel that we're wasting taxpayers' money by going out and having them in places outside of Parliament. So that's the party's position. It's not that we don't support workshops. We're very keen to attend those. We're very keen to attend anything that will increase our knowledge about our portfolios and help us to do our jobs and everything. But we're very aware of wasting taxpayers' money, and we want to be very careful about how we spend taxpayers' money. Thank you.
Thanks,
Chairperson, I firstly want to concur with what my colleague has said. I mean, we are very much in favour of workshops, and I think you would be able to acknowledge that I have communicated prior to the workshop. I have expressed my concern about the private game reserve and the cost of that. I have put that in writing, so it was not that I didn't do that, and I have said that I've asked a question to which I must admit that I have had no written response whatsoever, neither from you nor from the secretary, whoever. I got no response, so I put it on the table, which is a concern. There was a request for austerity measures, which we said there's no reason whatsoever. We couldn't have had it in the precinct. But besides that, we are very much in favour of workshops. But we know it's a time that we must tighten the belts and we must spend it properly on oversight. I mean, we haven't been really on oversight this parliamentary term. So, I don't think it's a good way of spending taxpayers' money to to go to game reserves and things like that. We could have done it here. It was a committee week as well. The week after that, so we had the commitment to come here. So that is our position.
Thanks, Mr. Mare. Dr. Kriane?
Thank you, Chairperson. Well, Honorable Chair, we must indicate here that those of us who went to that workshop were heartbroken to realize that some of our colleagues here, we may be coming from different political parties, it does not matter. We are all South Africans, we are members of this portfolio committee. If there is a decision that has been taken by the majority, it must affect all of us the same way. So up to the last moment, we were not aware that people were going to stay away. I think when the honorable members communicated with you or with anybody else regarding this invitation, they should have made it very clear that they were not going to attend the workshop.
I did that.
That was going to give us direction in terms of... the honorable Mr. Mare is interrupting me.
No, I just said it wasn't invited.
Can I call you to order, Mr. Mare? We yes. gave you an opportunity to do so without any interruption.
Yes,
please respect other people's views too.
So,
thank you.
What we should not allow, Chairperson, is that a party that is part of the democratic state of South Africa, which is not a majority party, cannot be allowed to become a majority party, a de facto majority party. We can't allow that to happen. The other parties are very important to our democratic state. That is why from 1994, the ANC has gone out of its way to invite other parties to come in and be part of government and so on, so that we work collectively as the people of South Africa within the context of the developmental state. Now of late, Chairperson, we have seen, not only in this portfolio committee, in other portfolio committees, we've seen a trend that is, surprising all of us, where some of the political parties decide to disengage in very important, activities of parliament. Sometimes they walk out, sometimes they do this, sometimes they do that. We cannot allow that to happen, Chairperson. We are not here just to play. We are here because we are concerned about the lives of our people. If the attitude that we get from the opposition parties here in South Africa is the one that says to us, see to finish ANC, that is fine. We can use the same attitude. And if people are going to choose which workshop they will attend, Chairperson, this one is fit to be in a parliamentary precinct. This one can be held in London or in New York and so on. We are not going to allow that to happen. If you are not in favor of a majority decision that is taken to say, we'll go to an outside venue because you want members to focus properly there, to concentrate and be able to suck in the information as it can be said. Different environment. We've done that many, many years ago during the years of struggle and so on. We know that system works. That is why we were given permission. So we need to make it very clear, Chairperson, that we have seen through what the opposition parties are doing. We did not expect them to do that, but they are doing it to us. We know how to act to ensure that we are not affected by this thing that they are doing here. We are concerned about the lives of our people. Maybe they can afford it. We can't afford it. We are the majority party. We've extended our hand of friendship to all the political parties in South Africa. If they want to bite this hand, Chairperson, let it be so. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think we've heard all of us from the DA, from the ANC, and I think it was going to be quite fair for the DA to have indicated as and when we were giving progress in relation to this particular workshop. I found it very opportunistic for Mr. Mare to have written to me at the last minute, of course, I must indicate, questioning the decision of holding the workshop outside. He was not even saying, he was saying we could preferably have, you know, holding, have held the particular workshop in Parliament. Previously, I think he's one of the people who've been motivating for holding such workshops outside Parliament. Parliament, if, because they are the ones, I mean the leadership of Parliament, if they had, for instance, put in place austerity measures, they could have informed us as committees likewise. And it shouldn't be like the only people who are concerned about the fiscal position of our country is from one side. We all are concerned. But that doesn't mean that we should stop activities. Because the very same workshop was going to help us, you know, to sharpen our minds, you know, sharpen us in terms of how best can we do oversight to ensure that our fiscal position in the country improves. And also to understand other issues related to the very same issues that Mr. Mare or the DA is raising. What puzzles me is that I got that letter from Mr. Mare, who said he won't be attending in terms of that letter. As I indicated, I got it at the last hour, late. But then Mr. Atkinson had already confirmed and was ready to attend. He was also informed at the last minute. He was recalled if I were to from that workshop, if I were to be open with them. He was prepared to attend. So even the position of the DA might have come late to Mr. Atkinson. So that's what I'm saying. Inform us in time, because we had booked, because Mr. Atkinson responded positively to the attendance of this workshop. Hence, he was accommodated in that thing. So, colleagues, I'm just pleading for your honesty, for your openness in discussing matters, because it has been the culture of this committee to put things on the table and discuss them openly. It doesn't mean we cannot do them otherwise. We can, but we chose this route we've chosen because we believe in transparency, we believe in openness, we believe in everybody's contribution. So I don't think we should start another culture that we're not going to be able to really, if we were to be challenged, we are going to be able to withstand Babe, Mr. Mare. Can we be honest with each other? I know we're from various different political parties pursuing different ideologies, but in terms of interests of the country, I think we all have the similar interests, just that we pursue in different ideologies and philosophies, if we were to put it that way. Which to South Africans, it means we all believe in the growth of the country, the development of the country, but using different ways and paths. But we all want to get to the same destination. The goal is the same, but the methodology is the one that is different. So please, let's not make an issue out of something that is not an issue. I respect party political positions. I do respect, because as ANC we also do have. But unfortunately, if we put matters on the table, be open and honest with us. Let's discuss that if you feel you have an issue. Maybe we could have agreed with you that we needed to take your vote. But because we are not open with us, we were not able to do so. So you deprived us of also, because this process, we all learn. We learn from what you say. You must also be able to learn from what we are saying. It's not a one-way thing. It should be a two-way thing. So I'm saying, therefore, that if you're saying is the position is that everything is held here, we can also question, you know, the others. Because if you say we should have oversight visits, we're staying in hotels. Why don't you say we stay in legislature houses with our colleagues in the legislature? Why can't we stay there if we want to really save money, instead of staying in hotels? Because that we have a lot of money that we spend. I think Mr. Mare has that experience on accommodation. We spend days and days, you know, on the road. We have cars, we have everything. If we really have to look at austerity issues here, we need to be open, put it on the table. Let's look at what exactly do we see as areas where we can cut off fat and areas where we could. We can even decide to stay in one-star hotels if we agree. But let's put things on the table. Don't just come to us with surprises and with the decisions that we know nothing of and our leadership knows nothing of. When I say leadership, leadership of this institution knows nothing of. So it means they're just taking decisions that we do not know. And we are in the leadership. The ANC is in power. The money is, they know of what is there and what's not there. And I think we are, it's our Minister of Finance who's been concerned raising some of these issues. And I don't think there's nothing that we are using that is not budgeted for. Otherwise, the leadership wouldn't have agreed and given us that permission. So colleagues, let's just be honest to each other, discuss matters on time, so that we are not all of us caught by surprise, and we don't have issues that, you know, to entertain issues that are really non-issues at the end of the day when you look at them. So I take it that this matter is clarified. You want to come in again?
Yeah.
I thought I was closing.
No, I think, you know, you say it, and I hope it will be clarified and be finalized. I just want to say that I will forward you my initial letter again, which I sent immediately the day when we were informed of the game reserve. So that was not at the last minute. I've got my paper trail, so I will send you the proof again. And then I just want to say last, I mean, we hear what you say, and we're not going to go into a debate about that. It's your choice whether you accept our bona fides or not. We cannot force you to do that. And then lastly, I mean, we are here because we've got a right, not because the ANC allowed us. As has been said, we've got a right, and we represent people, and this is our parliament, and that's why we will sit here, and we will make the best decisions that we believe the best decisions. We are part of this committee, so that's it. Accept it and accept our bona fides, because I mean we accept your bona fides, and there's only the correct thing to accept our bona fides as well, and not to always doubt that whether we've got alternative motives or not. Thank you.
I'm saying we respect you, your decision, Mr. Marais, but don't. Yes, don't be selective, I agree with that, but also don't make us go into fruitless expenditure. That's what we're saying. Otherwise, if we say you pay back that money that that we had paid for you, we can't take such decisions. We don't want to, but I'm just putting this on the table so that in future, you become open. As we discuss matters, you don't go at the back and then be sending chairperson letters. The chairperson brings the matter before the table. You don't discuss matters on the table. You then go to your office and write me letters. I'm not going to, obviously going to respond to such, because I put matters on the table for discussion. And if you feel you have a contrary view, put it on the table, let it be discussed. And if you have anything to clarify, clarify it on the table so that we all have the a common understanding on the issues you're trying to raise to us. Maybe those issues are meant to help the committee. But if you go and want to engage the chairperson alone, I'm not a chairperson of you know, offices. I'm a chairperson leading people here, a team. And we've been a team that far. I don't understand why would then I want to be responding to letters when we can talk one-on-one here. So really, I'm not going to respond to such letters in future. So I don't want you to, especially on matters that I put before the table. So please don't waste your pen and your airtime or your database by sending me such, because I'm not going to respond on matters that I've put on the table. I'll respond if a matter was not discussed and it warrants that I respond to that. But if it's a matter that I need to put to the table, even if you've written me such letters, I will still put it on the table for discussion. Because I believe I don't lead alone. I lead a team. And it's through that team effort that we can be able to prosper in whatever that we're doing. I'm not an individual. I work as a collective, and that's how I was taught in my organization. So that's how we work, and that's how I've been working with you two, and you've been enjoying that even previously. I'm not sure what changed. So I'm not going to change because now the DA has changed direction. I'm going to pursue things the way I've been dealing with them because it worked for us, unless somebody comes and convinces that that has not been working. So colleagues, please, let's be open to one another. Let's be transparent in whatever we are doing. And let's not push ideology or ideological matters even where they do not fit. Where possible, let's try to come together. And in every instance, let's try and come together so that we can continue serving our people, because that's the most important thing. I don't think this is really warrants us to spend 2 hours on it. It's very clear that now we understand each other, and respect of decisions of political parties will continue to do so, but we must also accept the fact that the ruling party takes certain decisions, as you would have if you were in the ruling seat. So respect that. And there's nothing that we're going to do that is going to jeopardize the integrity of this committee. We'll try by all means at all times to do things from the book. And thus far, this is what I thought we were doing. Members, I take it there's that understanding. Can we continue? Okay. This matter, I take it that has been struck off the agenda, and we will not, I don't think we'll ever discuss it in future. But for now, can we rise for lunch, and then we'll come back at 2 when we meet with the department on their non-financial report. On Thursday, we'll continue at 1, where we'll be looking at the financial performance report of the department, and also looking at the Competition Commission annual report, both financial and non-financial. It's time for you to say something.
Just to bring your attention that a lunch has been organized, but it's not a good lunch, it's a light, healthy lunch.
Where is, I like the health first. What time would that be?
It should be 1 o'clock.
Whereabouts?
It's 12 now. Okay. Please come back at 1 for that lunch. Otherwise, you must save your money. I know others were planning to go and buy lunch. Please save that money. You can buy dinner for yourself. Thank you. Meet you at 2 then. Meet in standard, yeah?
I'm going to go to the hospital.